Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Filled with odd fright, see Jurassic Right. Bathe in amber light, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Park.
There's a lot of intros you could do, but I feel like composer is kind of just the hippest, coolest thing you can be. obviously, composer for Beyond the Gates, which is a really rad toy Target video thing. Anyway, he's done so much great music for Jurassic Outpost, all Jurassic Park podcasts, all your favorite Jurassic things, and he has a really great YouTube channel. It's Caleb Burnett. How's it going?
Hey, it's good, man. Or, thank you for having me.
Or Caleb Composed, which is just such a great. You're like, ah, oh, yes, I, because I guess if you had a different, if score, or if your last name had an S in it, or if you're, you know, the alliteration is just too perfect.
It is. When I made that username, I was actually thinking like I'm gonna compose a tweet because like people used to talk that way.
Oh, yes, you're right.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, I'm a composer, too. So that works pretty well. So
that's so funny. Ugh. I mean, I feel like we should just go back to the beginning. And the thing that I've been thinking about recently that I used to do on this podcast is that kind of dynamic between did you grow up like what came first, you know, as far as the dinosaur chicken or the egg, mm-hmm. Were you a dinosaur kid first or were you a Jurassic Park kid? And yeah, I don't know. How did that play out? And then do you remember the first time you saw Jurassic Park?
I was a Jurassic Park kid first. I was born in 95, so I didn't get to see the original in theaters or anything. I saw it when I was 8 or 9 years old, kind of in the back room at my grandparents' house where I was allowed to watch scary movies. And I was watching it with my aunt. And I remember it was the first time I ever saw it. And I remember she told me a story while we were watching it because it was coming. I remember it was coming up to the T-Rex breakout. But I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, we're coming up on a scary part. And then the T-Rex breakout happened and it was terrifying. And then she told me this story of how when she saw Jurassic Park in theaters during the T-Rex breakout scene, someone in the row behind her like dropped some loose change or candy or something and was like reaching around trying to find it and like grabbed her wrist really forcefully.
Oh my God.
The T-Rex breakout scene. And so I was like, oh my gosh. So it's like an extremely memorable Jurassic Park theater experience. So
wow.
Yeah, she told me that story like while I was watching Jurassic Park for the first time. But
like the real 4DX experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was 8 or 9 years old. I remember right when it finished, like it was on TV. And so right when it finished, I went and sat down at the computer and pulled up Google and was like, Jurassic Park sequels is what I typed. I remember
really?
Typing
wow.
in. Yeah. So yeah, that's how I found The Lost World and Jurassic Park 3 at the time, because this was like, I don't know, very, very early, like 2000s, like 2002, 2003, which tells you that I'm a youngling. The dinosaur thing didn't, because I wouldn't say that I was a dinosaur kid or like a dinosaur person then. Sure. Like I was just a I loved the Jurassic trilogy and loved those movies. And I actually, I would tell you that Jurassic Park is my favorite now, but like when I was a kid, The Lost World was my favorite.
Really?
Like, top. And I don't know. It was just like I was a kid and it was like more action, more dinosaurs, you know, and so like yeah. that. And so the Jurassic World movies and trilogy came around and sort of revitalized the franchise and the fandom and everything. And that really sort of sparked me to being who I am now, the Jurassic obsessed person that I am now. And that with the Jurassic World trilogy is when I really started to get into like paleontology and dinosaurs and stuff as well. And just because I got older and like, you know, worldviews change and you become interested in new stuff, and the dinosaur paleontology side of it is as big as it has been now, like as an adult, and like way bigger than it was when I was a kid. So yeah.
No, I love that. I really like that, because I mean, it just, you know, for, especially if you were like a, you know, like how I was 6 when Jurassic Park came out. And that's that sort of thing where like the movie inspires people to get into science or get into filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
you know, nostalgia can have a lot of rose colored glasses. And I love that, you know, Jurassic World is probably just as inspiring probably to young kids in many ways too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just Jurassic Park, or again, you know, and I know lots of people, I mean, I definitely really loved Lost World and as a kid, just as much as Jurassic Park. I guess for you, did Jurassic Park, so is your interest, you know, your, you know, as a composer, was that something that you noticed right away, or was it almost more of like, again, two separate things that sort of came together later?
I'd say it's like two separate things that came together later. Cause growing up, when I loved the Jurassic films, like I wasn't thinking about like being a musician or
yeah.
doing any of that. And so like, actually like, so in undergrad, when I was studying music, like I knew I wanted to study music in undergrad, but like, I didn't know what or where or how. And so like, while I was studying music in undergrad, I took I obviously still love Jurassic, but I took, an American film music class, and sort of, I had never really studied or analyzed film music before. And so like one of the required films for this film music class was Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, I like this. And so through that, I realized something that I, you know, knowledge that I didn't possess before, was how impactful and how, manipulative in a good way, the score in Jurassic Park is, and like what it how good a film score has to be to do those things, and how powerful that is. And like, that is extremely true for Jurassic Park. And I was like, okay, this is like being a as a musician and someone who loves music, I realized like, okay, this is the score in this movie is a massive reason why I like this movie so much. Like I realized that then. And, and also at that point, I was kind of like, I want to make music like this also. Yeah. that is powerful and affects people that way. So like, that's kind of how I came there. So I would say that, Jurassic Park's score was like super influential in making me want to be a composer and making me love film music in general as much as I do. So,
well, and that's, I mean, it's interesting. Like that brings up such a great point where like, you know, even like as far as Jurassic Park making people want to become a paleontologist, you literally get to see Alan Grant and Elliot Sadler on a dig site. And as far as filmmaking goes, it's Jurassic Park is such a, it's, you can see the effort, you know, as far as like the animatronics and, you know, that this is like the birth of CGI and making this stuff seem real. But when it comes to composing, it is hard to sort of, maybe as a kid in my head would be hard to imagine, because it's not like you can see somebody playing guitar and you're like, ah, yes, that's, it's like,
yeah.
In my head, I mean, I've always loved, film scores, and I've always, you know, in high school, I, you know, owned everything. I owned the scores for all of my favorite movies and stuff. And, but yeah, because it's such a collective effort, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. the actual composer, and there's the conductor, and then, you know, depending how big the orchestra is, and then, you know, computer elements are brought in and everything. Mm-hmm. Was it that class that sort of wrapped your head around all that as far as, you know, again, pushing you on this path to become a composer?
Yeah, in a way. So like, it's funny because the professor who I had for that class, he and I still talk regularly because I actually teach music composition lessons and like film music composition lessons as an adjunct at my undergrad. So I still talk to this professor regularly. And he actually, like, it's funny because Jurassic Park had a similar effect on him in that, like, it didn't make him want to be a composer. It just made him want to study music, like the score and stuff. And so, like, thinking back, like, as a kid, it's funny because, like, as a kid, I never noticed the music. And then all of a sudden, as an adult in a college class, it's like, oh, like the music popped out and became this separate thing from the film. In that class, we talked about all the different roles and the hundreds of people it takes to create a film score and all those things. And yeah, I just knew I wanted to be a part of that, I guess, because the Jurassic Park score is so powerful. So yeah.
Well, and it's that fun thing in LA that you occasionally get to be part of. And I think they do this in other cities too, or like this kind of thing you can do where it's like, seeing the film Jurassic Park with a live orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And so like having been able to see something like that, then you also gain another appreciation for it, because I mean, just seeing, I don't know, the idea of, you know, doing that live in real time is just so, it's like a band, but with like 100 people, you know?
Oh yeah. And you see, I love those, and I'm so glad those kinds of concerts exist and are like so popular now. Like, cause they do those for new films all the time.
Yeah.
And it's the reason there aren't new films being performed like that all the time is because it takes so many people and so much effort and like a massive team to like put all that together. But that's something I love about those concerts, is you get to really, like, you get to see the film, but you also get to see how many people and like all of the effort that it takes to create that music while you're watching the movie. And it's awesome.
And what, as far as, obviously, cause like John Williams is the most popular, well-known American film composer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess Hans Zimmer maybe is like, he's still a young chicken compared to John Williams. So I feel like but I mean, I feel like John Williams is the guy as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it about his composing that makes the score for Jurassic Park so special to you in particular?
I mean, John Williams is credited with kind of the resurgence, or like bringing back the symphonic film score. And a lot more modern film scores these days aren't as, you know, fully orchestral or symphonic as some of John Williams' scores, particularly. I mean, Jurassic Park is definitely fully orchestral and symphonic, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with the way modern film scores are changing and doing things differently. But I think, you know, just structuring it in such a classical orchestral way and using all these motifs and themes for things that are extremely memorable. I don't want to get too deep into the crazy musical terms, but just like aleatoric writing, works very well with suspense and action music. And there's tons of that in Jurassic Park, just music that feels like it sounds like the instruments are playing random, crazy, suspenseful things, but it's all on the page, and it's meant to sound that way. It's meant to accompany these crazy, intense, suspenseful things that are happening on the screen in Jurassic Park. And so, and with the motifs and themes, like modern film scores don't do that as much, I would say. But with Jurassic Park, you have so many memorable motifs and themes in the orchestra that even people who aren't, you know, knowledgeable about music can hum back to you. Yeah. And know what they are. And they're iconic and memorable when they're using them in the trailers for the new movies 25 years later, like we're using the music from the other movies. And so it's like the Jurassic Park score is also just so diverse musically as far as the emotions it's portraying. Like you get haunting, you get suspense, you get beauty, you get utter terror, and you get resolution and peaceful music sort of at the end. Like there's just so many emotions involved that they're all portrayed with the same orchestra. And that's not easy to do. And then you also have some synths in there and some other electronic things around when like Nedry is stealing the embryos and hacking the security system and doing all that stuff. And so it's just Jurassic Park score is just it's a feat of music composition, honestly. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I could go on forever.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I've seen the film again in theaters twice this year, for the 30th anniversary. And the synth thing is, I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is a thing where, like, even at the opening of the movie, where it's this kind of like vocal thing, and then it's just like I don't think I ever noticed that. Or if I did, it's been so long since I've probably watched Jurassic Park on a good sound system. You know, maybe I'm just watching my phone and watching my computer. Even my TV is, you know, I don't have a nice sound, but I'm just watching TV speakers.
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, there are moments throughout the Jurassic Park score that it's like, this is so much more serious and big and intense than you would think it might be. Like, we're talking about a sci-fi adventure where people are going to an island with dinosaurs, and the first sounds of the movie that you hear is this like haunting chorus, as if we're headed towards something scary. And then in that music, in the very first scene of the film, that thing you were talking about is a synth thing, but then there's also like orchestra there. And something this is just a random fact about the score, of which I have hundreds, but like, so something I love about that first cue of the film is like, if you listen closely in the music, there's a slapstick being struck at times, and there's like a metal chain that's sort of being struck, those two percussive things. And apparently John Williams did that to represent, like, the slapstick sort of represents the wild animal sort of thing in the raptor, and the chains sort of represent like man and the constraints and the cages. And it's those two instruments are like going back and forth through that entire thing, just like the raptor and Muldoon in the scene.
Oh, wow.
It's that kind of musical personification in the Jurassic Park score that I think makes it just incredible and unique. So,
well, and I wanted to bring up an earlier point because, in, you know, as far as, again, it's like, I love all the terms. I'm here for it. Like, I definitely, I think Jurassic, I mean, I've definitely, as far as, you know, anytime I've made music, I love the idea of arranging things and, you know, that's why I think a lot of times the idea of becoming a composer or something can seem overwhelming. But as far as John Williams' role, in my head, when I hear symphonic, I think almost like it's score that's telling a story versus like, I think of when you mention like modern scores or things like where it's almost not atonal isn't the right word, but it's like, here's just a thing that's setting a vibe for the scene and it doesn't really go anywhere. And it's just like, here's a vibe. And then symphonic is almost like, here's a story. Is that kind of, are those the kind of two sides of this coin as far as the way scores work? Cause like, I think of, I don't know, like Atticus Finch and, oh my God, why can't I remember Trent Reznor? I was like the Nine Inch Nails guy.
Atticus Ross.
Atticus Finch. Like when I'm thinking of the Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's like Social Network score, which I really love. But then that year also John Powell's score for How to Train Your Dragon. It felt like that Oscar year was like the symphonic versus like kind of the newer school of like the vibe score sort of a correct, not saying correct as in right, but like when you're thinking about John Williams' role and like the music in Jurassic Park as it's like telling a story in each scene, the music itself is telling a story in that way. And then some scores are just sort of having music that sort of is the vibe of what's going on.
I would say that like, you know, past traditional symphonic scores and modern, more electronic hybrid orchestral scores, or, you know, full orchestral scores that are modern. I would say they're all telling a story. I just think they're doing it in different ways.
Okay.
And like they're finding their place and their part in the group of things that make up a film narrative. And like they're doing it in different ways. They're doing it for different audiences, different cultures, different times. Like, I don't know. It's film music has changed so much in the last 30 or 40 years. Like, I don't know. If Jurassic Park came out today, I think it would be a very, very different thing. Obviously, like the film, obviously, but like also, you know, the score would probably be different. The word I would use is like atmosphere.
Okay, atmosphere.
And so I think, you know, maybe more symphonic scores of the past, you know, they're still creating an atmosphere. It's just a very different vibe and atmosphere. And then the one, you know, modern film scores are leaning more into creating sort of a soundscape and an atmosphere and telling the story that way. But yeah.
The different ways to tell the story, but
yeah,
I feel like, I mean, I think our generation also grew up we grew up during the Howard Shore Lord of the Rings score renaissance, which was so theme heavy, and getting to hear the Hobbit theme on this instrument and that instrument and in this way and in this timing. And you mentioned that before of like the Jurassic World score bringing back. I mean, I think the very first Jurassic World trailer had the Jurassic World score, or had the, you know, the, da-na-na-na, it had that like slowed down on a piano. Yeah. And it is funny because I was at the movies I saw The Mummy, you know, another classic 90s film. And we've kind of, you know, in the last 20 years or not 20 years, but the last 10 years have been inundated with slowed down covers of classic rock songs, or now up until like now we're getting like Radiohead songs slowed down for movie trailers and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it is funny that in the Jurassic Park version of that, it's that you know, that classic Jurassic theme, but slowed down on a piano. But it is, you know, I don't want to say it's a character, but it just feels, it's hard to imagine a Jurassic Park film without putting that somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they used it because it's iconic and it, you know, people know it and, you know, they're going to recognize it and it's familiar. And I love that for that very first Jurassic World trailer and the way it uses that slowed down theme, because that theme in the, you know, in Jurassic Park and the Lost World in Jurassic Park 3, it's used more as like a, we're in awe of dinosaurs and this is a beautiful shot and, you know, all of those types of moments. And in the Jurassic World trailer, when they slow it down like that, it's like Claire saying, you know, Owen saying evacuate the island and Claire saying like, we'll never reopen. Like it's used in this like sort of scary, suspenseful way. And I really like that they like turned it around and twisted it around and used it in a different way. But
yeah. Well, and even in, I think it's not used that much in Fallen Kingdom, but then I think we were talking about this at some point, or is it at the end of the Dominion score where you hear like a really beautiful, you hear a really beautiful rendition of it at the end of the credits of either, maybe it's at the end of Fallen Kingdom. Do you remember this?
Are you talking about the
banana? Yeah. Yeah.
So Giacchino, the most prominent, and I say the most prominent because like it's referenced and sort of used in a few other places in the Jurassic World trilogy, but the most prominent use of that is in Dominion after the Jeep Gladiator rolls down the cliff and yes. Alan, Ellie, and Ian sort of come around the car. And that's another like great way to use that theme is because it's used basically as the music for Alan, Ellie, and Ian.
Yeah.
And like it's the trio. It's their music as you see them. And so, yeah.
I really love Michael Giacchino and I really love all the work that he's done with Jurassic. And I think it's that thing where when people are dealing with, you know, continuing a franchise or whatever, yeah, having to pick up the mantle and do the score. Obviously, Don Davis did the score after John Williams for Jurassic Park 3. And he did some great work in Jurassic Park 3 that I really love. But it is that push and pull of where, like, in my head, when you know, you think cynically, where it's like, was the studio being like, you got to hit that, you know, you got to hit those classic themes over and over again. But I honestly really enjoyed his restraint as far as, you know, not only reusing any of the Jurassic Park themes, you know, Lost World. I mean, I think that was as far as like people who are really into the fandom. We got really excited when Lost World themes were reused because that kind of nostalgia isn't quite as common, you know, as far as, you know, the larger, you know, perception of these Jurassic Park movies. And the Easter egg that I always really like is, you know, as far as like my favorite, you know, film composer Easter eggs in relation to the Jurassic Park franchise, that Michael Giacchino did the Lost World score, Jurassic Park score for the video game adaptation for PlayStation, and did the Warpath Jurassic score.
Yeah.
And I guess
scores are awesome. They're so good.
No, I mean, video game scores. I mean, I think people obviously really respect video game scores now. I don't think that's really a question. I mean, I'm bumping the Subnautica and Subnautica Below Zero scores all the time. Those are two of my favorite video game scores. But as far as, were you somebody when, like, did Jurassic World come out? Well, like, did you already like Michael Giacchino? Were you excited for his Jurassic World score? Or were these kind of things happening in tandem as you were becoming the big Jurassic Park fan that you are, getting involved in the community, and then, you know, seeing how it all played out with how these new films were scored?
I was already a Giacchino fan before Jurassic World because of, you know, a lot of people say Up. That's like the Giacchino that everybody says. Which is fantastic. He won an Oscar, but I I loved his Star Trek scores before Jurassic World. And when they announced that he was doing Jurassic World, I was like, okay, this is going to be cool. Because Giacchino has been in this situation a lot, but like a bunch of film composers nowadays are, I think, in a super unique position because we live in this film era of like sequels and reboots and remakes and all this stuff. And these composers are getting handed these films that have characters that were also in movies 40 years ago or 30 years ago or 60 years ago. You know, when it comes to Star Trek, when it comes to Star Wars, when it comes to Jurassic, when it comes to Indiana Jones and all these franchises that are continuing now. And so like, you know, Giacchino, a composer who got the Jurassic World gig could have, you know, that could have gone a lot of ways. You could have gone more traditional and did, you know, the fully symphonic orchestral Jurassic thing and used the themes all over the place and did that a lot. And I personally love what Giacchino did with these three movies. And I enjoy the choices he made of like only using these well-known classic themes when they're fully, really warranted in these very specific, impactful moments. And I think, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I wish he would use the Jurassic Park themes more and the Jurassic World scores. And I get that. I do. I love those themes. If they were all over the place in the movies, I would probably enjoy it. But like what I enjoy more is how special it feels when those themes are only used two or three times in the span of 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And it makes it more special. It makes you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is like a serious moment. And I think the places, you know, can I think of like one more spot in Jurassic World or Fallen Kingdom where maybe like a Jurassic Park theme could have been used in there? Maybe.
Yeah.
But also I think the places in Jurassic World and Fallen Kingdom where he used those well-known Jurassic Park themes are great. Like when Claire and Masrani are flying in the helicopter to the Indominus paddock, like the use of the Jurassic themes there is just fantastic. And I love the way he, personally, I love the way he warps the Jurassic Park theme when the Rex comes out of Paddock 9.
Yeah.
I love that. And because it's like, you know this theme, but and you know this dinosaur also, but it's, we're not in the same situation. We're 25 years later and this is completely different. So yeah, yes, it's Jurassic Park, but it's sort of like a warped take on it. And so, you know, where that whole Giacchino using themes conversation sort of changed is like in the run up to Jurassic World Dominion, because I was talking with Brad about this, I think, on Jurassic Park podcast, but it was like, you know, the original trio is coming back. And, you know, we have all these literal elements of Jurassic Park that are going to be in this movie. And so the conversation in my mind and, you know, on the pod with Brad was kind of like, I think out of all of the Jurassic World movies, there are going to be the most opportunities to use those classic themes in this movie. And that ended up being true because like you used them multiple times in relation to Alan, Ellie and Ian.
Yeah.
And then in relation to other stuff too, the Dominion score does a great, maybe the best job of weaving those Jurassic Park themes seamlessly, connecting them to the Jurassic World music and making them all feel like they're in the same sort of conversation and in the same world. They don't feel disjointed or like separate at all. They feel like interwoven with each other. So that's a long answer to your question, but
no.
The answer is that I think Giacchino did a really great job, and I think there's value to I personally, I think there's value to doing something different for the sake of doing something different. And that's what Giacchino did. So,
well, and to that point as well, I mean, if you stop to even think about the three Jurassic World movies, because, you know, I think a lot can be said that there is a little bit more consistency in those three movies because they were all made. We just live in a world where things are thought more consistently versus like, we'll just make the next one. We'll just make the next one versus, you know, this is more planned out. But at the same time, like, the three Jurassic World movies are very different as far as the vibe and the mood and the atmosphere and stuff. When you think about Jurassic World's a fully functioning theme park, Fallen Kingdom is a natural disaster into a haunted house movie. And then Jurassic World Dominion is a globe-trotting adventure. So it's just sort of, you know, how do you reconcile that stuff? And as far as like, where do you hear the Jurassic World themes in Fallen Kingdom and in Dominion? Where do those moments come back? And I don't know how you feel about it, but personally for me, I feel like my favorite Giacchino theme, I think in general, as far as just as memorable as anything from Jurassic Park, is the moment that it always sticks out to me in the track and the soundtrack and stuff that I go back to is when the Indoraptor gets to the top of the house and the lightning flashes and all that
world's
stuff.
Worst bedtime storyteller.
And then I guess as far as this goes, what are some of your favorite Giacchino themes from the world movies?
I love this question. I think before I get to that, I was going to say, I think it's cool is that the Jurassic World trilogy was the first time we've ever had the same composer get to do all three movies.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
And there was value to that. Cause like there are themes in Jurassic World Dominion that were introduced in Jurassic World. And I think that's cool. Piggybacking off of that, I guess I wasn't crazy about this theme when he introduced it in Jurassic World, but then he brought it back and reused it in sort of a similar but different way in Jurassic World Dominion. And I would call it the family, like the Jurassic family theme. I don't know if that's the best name for it. It's the cue that it's sort of introduced in Jurassic World is called the family that strays together. And it's the that thing. And it's used for Zach and Gray and sort of their family in Jurassic World. But then he really interestingly, to be honest with you, he brought it back in Dominion and used it for the family that is Claire and Owen and Maisie.
Yeah.
And I thought that was perfect, and it made me like the theme even more, made it even more powerful. I really like that theme. I love Owen's theme that he introduced in Jurassic World, the chasing the dragons when he first rides the motorcycle with the raptors, that score. I love that theme. You know, it doesn't get used as much in Fallen Kingdom, but it does. It is, you know, when after Blue has killed the Indoraptor and she sort of jumps down onto the floor and there's that, you know, shot of her up through Lockwood Manor. Like it gets like this epic rendition of it there in Dominion. I almost jumped out of my seat the first time it gets used because I was so excited. And it, you know, when Owen rides with the Parasaurolophus herd on his horse, it gets used there, but it's made into sort of this like Western guitar thing. And it's awesome. And I love that theme. I'm trying to think what else. I love the one you were talking about from Fallen Kingdom so much. That theme I would call the Fallen Kingdom theme is what I would call that. It's just I was listening to the last episode you released today, and y'all were talking about Fallen Kingdom a little bit, and the gothic older sister of the and I think the music matches that. It's like this sort of epic horror music, and it's awesome and it's great. Fallen Kingdom theme, yes. What else
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, I remembered where my point was leading to, and my question to you was, I think some people were a little mixed at, and I'm thinking about this question now even more clearly, because you think about, I was rewatching The Lost World recently, and the title for that film just pops up on the screen. It's just, you're just over waves, and it's just very subtle. And even Jurassic Park is kind of just like, here, it's just kind of happening. JP3, you get a little bit of a sheek, you know, with the claws, and it's a little silly and fun. Yeah. But especially with and Jurassic World, well, I might as well recap them all while we're here. Jurassic World, it's the egg, you know, the egg opens and the eye. Mm-hmm. And then, but with Fallen Kingdom was when it introduced this huge logo treatment, the lava.
Yeah.
And all of that. And then we get an epic version of that as well in Dominion. And I go back and forth on which version I prefer between the extended and the regular. But did you like when they gave the actual logo treatment title of the film this much bigger sort of to do? Because very different than everything else that had come before. Jurassic World barely has a prologue, basically, you know. So by the time we get to Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, it's like we get this dope 6-minute sequence that a lot of people got to see, you know, early and stuff. I think I saw it like 2 or 3 times by the time I saw Fallen Kingdom. And then just the like, you know, and it's like the lava's filling the low. And it's just, I mean, where was your head at when you first saw that?
So in case I'm not on this podcast ever again, or I don't get a chance to say this, I love Fallen Kingdom. I adore that movie. It is my favorite of the Jurassic World trilogy. And so I love the intro. I love the just bombastic, gothic, dark thing we're going for in many, many moments of that movie. And like, you know, at that point in the film, we didn't know about the volcano or anything yet. And like, we've got this big stone logo and lava's running all over it. And, I thought it was awesome. I love it.
it was such an interesting choice, and I'm so glad that they made it, because I don't know. I mean, having dinosaurs come back is pretty dramatic, you know? And so yeah, I feel
absolutely.
Like, and it's just, and again, it speaks to just, as these movies, and it's just a thing that I haven't really done. I don't know if you've done this, but I haven't really gone back and watched, like, I haven't done a marathon of all of them again. I've obviously watched the movies a bunch randomly.
Yeah.
But just getting to see the sequence of events, and it's just like, oh, we're in for something big this time.
Absolutely.
That's how I feel about it.
Whenever I get, whenever I have the supreme privilege and religious experience of seeing Jurassic Park in a movie theater, it always sparks a chronological watch of the Jurassic films for me. So like, I'll see Jurassic Park in a theater, and then I sort of require myself, like, instead of watching any Jurassic movie next, I watch The Lost World next. And then you know, next chance I get to watch one of them, I'll watch Jurassic Park 3. So like, I'm actually I'm in the middle of sort of a chronological watch through at the moment. But, and it's fun, honestly, like just seeing how the film world, like the Jurassic Park films are sort of a reflection of how the movie world over the last 30 years has changed. So
that's a great point.
Yeah.
You know, I obviously love listening to film scores, but I'm not necessarily somebody who's throwing in a film score into my, like, you know, pop music mix or rock music mix. It's just, it's almost just like two moods. It's like, I'll have a mix of like my favorite film score tracks, you know, or whatever. And then I'll have like a playlist of like, well, here's Carly Rae Jepsen or whatever. But the first track on the Dominion score, the Die Now, I mean, I want to get the name correct, but
Die Now This.
Yeah. And it's just the like, da-na-na-na, like, I don't know. Can you explain if there, I mean, your thoughts on that? Cause it is just a variation. It's kind of a different variation on the opening of the Fallen Kingdom score. I don't know. I just think it really sets up the concept of this world is now filled with dinosaurs. That's just how I, that score makes me like understand that in my bones, for lack of a,
oh no, that,
you know, better pun or whatever, but it's just like, oh snap, like dinosaurs are here, they're not just on an island anymore. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. You're speaking to the power of good film music, like, and a great composer who knows how to like express emotions through instruments and types of things. Like that, the score for that opening of Dominion, it sets the tone perfectly. It's ominous, and it just builds over a long period of time, to be honest.
Is it an oboe? What is that, like, like it feels like a low wind instrument.
Probably bassoon.
Oh, bassoon.
And something like that. And honestly, like these nowadays with film scores, like it's probably a mixture of things in the, like,
yeah.
Doubled or tripled or quadrupled in the mix, like to make it pop out like that. I'm thinking to that sound, and I think it, like the forward facing part of it is a bassoon, and then maybe some other woodwind stuff. But no, you get that sort of musical motif that you're talking about isn't, I mean, it's in that intro thing, and it's sort of used around the main Dominion theme, which you get in that piece of music as well. And at the end, when it builds at the end and the logo flies at you, like that's what I would call the Dominion theme. But
yeah,
something I love about that cue is, you know, it's the first few minutes of the movie, and it's the first few minutes of music that you hear, and you get the Biosyn theme as well, like when you're seeing Dodgson and they're talking about all that too. And it goes from being ominous, and then it's sort of like intriguing, and we're making all these scientific discoveries, and Biosyn's doing this, and dinosaurs tell us more about ourselves or whatever.
yeah.
Whatever he says. And then you're back to like this, dinosaurs are out and the world has changed and we have to cope with this, and it builds, and it's a great piece of music.
Well, and you know, we've been talking a lot about this, the more dramatic side of the Jurassic thing. And I think one of my favorite absolute modern day Jurassic Park moments is the end of Amy Doherty's score for Battle at Big Rock, where it's a brum, brum, brum. It feels like, cause I mean, again, I think there's a big contingent of Jurassic Park fans who loved, you know, we love dinosaurs, we love them as animals, but these are also monster movies, and maybe to a fault, some people wish that the Jurassic franchise would just lean one way or the other instead of kind of being in this middle section, you know. But I feel like that's a big part of I guess I have to say the DNA of all this stuff. But it is just like that's the almost the frustrating thing about their Jurassic franchise is it lived, like, I'm doing this motion with my hands, but it's like it's lived perfectly teetering on, like, you know, some of the Jurassic movies are more monster movies, and some of them are more, you know, leaning into them as animals. And it's, you know, and a lot of movies just kind of go back and forth of the course. And
yeah.
And also, yeah, I mean, did you enjoy Amy Doherty's score? Like, was it exciting to hear? Again, obviously, you mentioned before that, you know, I'm glad that we got somebody consistent for this trilogy, but also, was it exciting to hear another voice contribute to, you know, the Jurassic franchise in the modern world?
No, absolutely. A massive shout out to Amy Doherty. She's an incredible composer. If I'm not mistaken, Giacchino knew someone who knew someone and sort of recommended her for that, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But she was a fantastic choice because her style is orchestral and it fit something that could sort of mold itself into what a Jurassic score is. Her score for Battle at Big Rock was fantastic. I loved it. And it used the Jurassic World main theme, but it also used the Jurassic Park theme and it used parts of the Lost World, like the credits are the Lost World theme, and made it to where, like, and this is just me speaking, nobody else, but like, I think that is a big part of what made it to where she couldn't release that score because of licensing and stuff with some of those themes.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But the score is fantastic. It's perfect. It uses those sort of very lyrical musical themes of Jurassic, but then it also is like super bombastic and good with the suspense and the terror that's in Battle at Big Rock too. So she's great.
Yeah. And Leo Barenberg as well. We just have to give a shout out.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Camp Cretaceous. Cause it's, I mean, I've talked to him on this podcast before and you can listen to that episode, but just again, that idea even too of having to, you know, I mean, that's the story of Jurassic, is there was, you know, initially two books by Michael Crichton and people making, you know, six movies, you know, a short, then five seasons of a TV show. It's like, again, it's this is the universe that I want to be living in.
Absolutely. No, what I was going to say was, like, you said the DNA thing.
Yeah.
You're talking about like the different elements of the movies and, you know, monsters versus animals and, you know, genres, like, you know, we have to replace parts of the DNA and we have to evolve and be different things. So good. Makes sense.
Well, and then on that level, obviously I have to mention, because you've composed things for Jurassic Park podcast, Jurassic Outpost, these Beyond the Gates. So what, I mean, it's, what has that process been like for you personally?
it's been a dream. It's like these Jurassic things that I've been very fortunate to work on are my favorite things that I get to work on. Very early on, like as far as the Jurassic Outpost and the Beyond the Gates stuff goes, early on in that process, one of my first questions was, can I touch the John Williams themes? Can I reference them? Can I do anything like that? And they were like, probably not.
Yeah, yeah.
And just because licensing and all that stuff, which is fine. And so, but if I had the ability to like reference those things or use those things, I don't know if I would all that much anyway, because I don't know, these doing the music for these things presented a fun opportunity to like create something that was my own, but also sort of fit in the style and the vernacular of Jurassic. And like, that's Jurassic Park is the score that made me want to be a composer. And like, I love the scores of all six films. And so like, getting to make new music that is in the spirit and the feeling and like the style of that is extremely fun. It's a great time.
It's very much like a false notion that there are, like, you know, creators who just make everything new and it's all themselves. And then there's people who do covers and it's like they're just mimicking things that have come before, when the reality is John Williams and Michael Giacchino, they're referencing things. They're doing, you know, thinking back of monster movies or other, you know, Lost World is the King Kong Jurassic Park movie. And, you know, Fallen Kingdom is the Universal Monsters, like Dracula. And, you know, I remember Jay Bayona talking about, Dracula and things like that. And so, this is truly is just like a false dichotomy. And obviously you could play with the themes and stuff, but it's like, like you said, this was a challenge to be able to, hey, I'm working on a thing that is all these lovely things, you know, in this community that you're part of are, truly making things that are so cool and interesting, and also paying homage and getting to talk about the things that we love. It gets to be both. It isn't one or the other, if that makes sense.
John Williams was inspired by, you know, heavily inspired by Bernard Herrmann and Eric Wolfgang Korngold, who were like composers in the 1930s and 40s and 50s and 60s. And then John Williams comes in and sort of becomes prominent in the 70s and 80s and 90s and 2000s. And so, and then, you know, Hans Zimmer, if you like, he is someone who says that he was personally inspired by John Williams. And so, like,
that's wild.
Hans Zimmer is creating these new scores in the 90s and the 2000s and the 2010s and now. And so it's like, I think it's a moot point to be like, oh, John Williams is copying this person, or Hans Zimmer's copying John Williams, or this person's copying this person. Like, because I don't think it's intentional. And two, the intention is to create narratives and feelings and emotions and aid in storytelling. Like, and why would you not at the very least follow the example of these people who have done it really, really well?
Yeah. This idea of pitting these sort of dichotomies and things against each other is very, just like you said, it's a moot point. It's just sort of like, and ultimately I love that. I love what you're saying, that it's like, if it's to tell a story. And again, there's been so many great moments and scores where like the Requiem for a Dream score is being used to sell the Two Towers when it first came out. And it's just like, all right, this is great. Or maybe it was the Return of the Kings, but whatever. But again, it's just that idea of like, and, you know, I mean, this is a whole other thing, like issues of nowadays where it's like a lot of temp music is put in and then composers just, or the directors just want the composers to, you know, redo the temp music that they were using. And it's just, hopefully, if as long as it's all used to tell a good story, then it doesn't really matter.
That's it's funny because like, I think John Williams and even Michael Giacchino and some of these other guys have gotten to a point in their career where like they get these, they sign on to do a film and they get these gigs and then they get the, you know, they get a cut of the film and it's got temp score with it and it's their music. Like I have no doubt like John Williams has gotten a cut of a film to score and it's temped with music that he wrote.
Like, that's got to be very surreal. You're just the MC Escher-ness of that. The call is coming from inside the house sort of vibe must be so surreal. And yet, you know, so many people are, I'm definitely somebody where I can be like, the score can sometimes be better than the movie itself. Yeah. I'm definitely in that camp that there's some movies. I wish I could think of a movie right now. Well, I mean, The Village, I think, is just a really great example of that, where I just think that's one of the best film. I think that's one of the best film scores of all time, if not in my top five. And yet, I don't think I, as much as I love that movie and, you know, it brought Bryce Dallas Howard to us, you know, and all that stuff. But I'm like, that's nowhere near my top 20 movies, but that film score is in my top five film scores.
Yeah. Well, no, man, James Newton Howard, that score is just wild. This is like a completely separate conversation, but he's so good at like with The Village and with Signs, like just so good at creating these like haunting things in music that just stick to you forever. But yeah.
No, it's again, it just speaks to the power of film music. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this has been really fun. I have a couple rapid fire. I'm glad we really got to get in the, you know, at least the beginning of the weeds. Film composing and film scores. And obviously I want to have you back to talk more about this stuff.
Yeah.
But obviously I always have to ask this question. Everybody I have on this podcast is like, would you go to Jurassic Park if it was open today or Jurassic World?
I would. Yeah, I would. I sort of fluctuate on that question because Alan Grant and Ian Malcolm were like so influential on me growing up and they're very influential on like my personality. And so like sometimes I'm Alan Grant and I'm excited and like would almost pass out if I saw a dinosaur. But then on the other side, I'm Malcolm and I'm like, this is a terrible idea. Like they should all be destroyed. But right now, as we see her right now, I would go to Jurassic Park. Yes.
I love it. And then of course the most fun thing is, you know, you're at Jurassic Park, you're like, damn it, this is a movie. Everything breaks out and you're about to be, this is a choose your own death adventure. How would you want to go by a dinosaur?
Oh man. I think the classic just chomp and gulp by the T-Rex.
The old chomp and gulp.
Chomp and gulp. Yeah.
Well, I love it. Thank you so much, Caleb. It's great to finally have you on. It's been 65 million years in the making.
But thank you for having me.
Of course. And again, I mean, well, we can wax more about Fallen Kingdom again, because I mean, it definitely still is in my top three Jurassic. So as far as my rankings go.
Yes, please. Let's wax about Fallen Kingdom. Yes.
But where can people follow you, find you, check out your music, check out your YouTube channel, all that great stuff. Follow you, find you again on all the good things.
Yeah. So I'm at Caleb Composed on all things, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, whatever else is in existence now. And I also have a YouTube channel where I unbox Jurassic toys and other toys, and I vlog, and yeah, it's called Jurassic Caleb. So check that out. Hit the subscribe button.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, we have to talk toys too. That's you have Absolutely. Such a great setup. Go to his YouTube channel, look it up. The way his dinosaurs are organized makes me weep for my setup, because it's just a pile. But thank you again, Caleb. And yeah. For now, everyone, hold on to your butts until next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.